with the left, you will fake, so I'm gon' grab you with the left, I feel like I'm the lecturer, nigga, left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, Please don't make me slap you with the left, you will fake, so I'm gon' grab you with the left, I feel like I'm the lecturer, nigga, left. It's like I'm on an island by myself,
What it do, bitches? What's up?
All right. So. Everybody is suing President Trump. I might hop in on a lawsuit or two. Yeah, it is getting. It's getting interesting. The emoluments lawsuits are real. They're real as a heart attack. Trump doesn't want you to know that, doesn't want you to think about that, but it's the case. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to lead with that here in just a second. We also have President Trump had a meeting at the White House with all of his cabinet members, and he basically set up a North Korean-style propaganda fest. He had everybody go. He went around the room and had everybody just heap praise on him. What a ridiculous person. Okay, we're going to talk about that too. Chelsea Manning did her first interview since getting out of prison. Very interesting stuff we'll talk about. So-called intellectual on the right, Charles Krauthammer, he decided to weigh in on Bernie Sanders' wing of the Democratic Party. And, whoa. Shocker, a Fox News host manages to get every single thing he says wrong. And the body-slamming reporter, he has been sentenced. And there is punishment. Wow, looks like the justice system is working. We have punishment for a politician and a rich douchebag who broke the law. So we have a lot of stuff to get to. And I'm not going to beat around the bush here, pun intended. Let's jump right into it. And we're going to start with Trump and the Constitution and the Emoluments Clause. And I'll have a little video for you as we go along. The Maryland and District of Columbia Attorneys General are suing Trump over his corruption. So there's a separate group called CRU, which I think is Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. They sued Trump over him violating the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. I'm going to get to that in more detail in a little bit. And now the Maryland and District of Columbia Attorneys General go, oh, wow, this definitely has merit to it. So now we're getting in on the lawsuit as well. So let's watch a short video on this real quick. This is from Time.
Never in the history of this country have we had a president with these kinds of extensive business entanglements, or a president who refused to adequately distance themselves from their holdings. President Trump's businesses and his dealings violate the Constitution's anti-corruption provision.
It says, the Maryland and D.C. Attorneys General filed a federal lawsuit against President Trump. I'm reading to you guys what's on the screen. They claim he's violating the Emoluments Clause in the Constitution. The suit says the fact that Trump retains ownership of his company while serving as president has made him deeply enmeshed with a legion of foreign and domestic government actors.
The president, above all other elected officials, must have only the interests of Americans at the heart of every decision. Our constituents must know that a president who orders their sons and daughters into harm's way is not acting out of concern for his own business. They must know that we will not enter into a treaty with another nation because the president owns a golf course there. They must know that we will not change our trade policy because a foreign government patronizes the president's hotels or resorts, and that the president will not favor one state over another with millions of dollars of federal money because one state has given his business a tax break.
The Attorney General will request Trump's personal tax returns in the discovery process. And there you go. This is real. You guys know I get on the corporate Democrats all the time for harping away on scandals that aren't really scandals yet, at least. They do Russia, Russia, Russia all day long. But the reality is Trump hasn't done a single policy that's benefited Russia. So when you talk about how he's Putin's puppet, where's the evidence? You know? And people will say, yeah, well, there's stuff he's gotten from Russia. Really? What? I haven't seen it. If there is, maybe I'm wrong, but I certainly haven't seen it. But even if that was the case, well, then what are they getting in return? What's Russia getting in return? The obvious answer is some sort of sanctions relief or something. But there's been no sanctions relief for what happened in Crimea with the sanctions that Obama put on Russia. And there's been no waiver for the ExxonMobil Russia oil deal, which is a multi-trillion-dollar deal. So there's nothing there yet. If there is something there, I'll be the first one to come out here and call it out. I mean, obviously, it's not like I'm protecting Donald Trump. I despise the guy. I do multiple segments every day ripping him to shreds. But I want the Democrats to focus on things that make sense. And here you have a lawsuit that is as merited as I've ever seen ever. So Donald Trump has businesses in at least 12 different, perhaps 15 different countries. It depends how you calculate it, if you include, like, countries where it's just like pass-through businesses, if that makes any sense. I'm not even sure that makes any sense. Like, it's minimum 12. We'll just go with that. Trump has businesses in at least 12 different countries. So what's going to happen when you have a head of state entangled with all these different countries for a personal financial gain? What's going to happen is those countries are going to get favoritism. They're going to get special treats. And in return for that, they heap praise on Trump and they give him favors as well. It's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. So Trump will look to give subsidies to these countries and do deals with these countries and, you know, do weapons deals, for example, economic trade deals. But what are they going to do in response? Well, we already have the answer in some cases. So one of the countries where they're really working overtime to get on Trump's good side is China. And what they've done is they've granted him approval for some trademark stuff and some patent stuff that he's been waiting a really long time for. Well, now that he's president, they go, okay, give it to him, and then maybe he won't, like, you know, crack down on us, and maybe he won't switch up trade policy to benefit the U.S. more, and he'll keep it biased in favor of us. So there's a million ways for a president like Trump, who has personal business ties all around the world, to bias policy in favor of those countries, and in the process also screw over the American people. So take Saudi Arabia, for example. He registered 8 new businesses there during the campaign. Well, then lo and behold, now that he's president, they announced a $400 billion economic deal with Saudi Arabia, including a $110 billion weapons deal. That is not the correct policy for the American people or for the world, to give a terror state a $400 billion economic deal and $110 billion worth of weapons when we know they're going to turn around and funnel some of those weapons to jihadists in Syria and they're going to kill women and children in Yemen using weapons that violate international law, by the way, white phosphorus, cluster bombs, you name it. So if he wasn't personally tied in and financially tied in with Saudi Arabia, well, maybe he does a more reasonable policy. I mean, remember, before he ran for president, he called Saudi Arabia the number one state sponsor of terror, and he's correct in that. But now that you're president and you have personal business ties there and you have golf courses in a bunch of the Gulf states, now all of a sudden it's kid gloves, and Iran is the number one state sponsor of terrorism, even though they're not, and you 100% buy the neocon line now. So this is a clear example of he has a lot to gain personally by doing the wrong policy. And this is also something he called out Hillary Clinton for repeatedly. When you talk about the Clinton Foundation, for example, they took, I think it was Bill Clinton, took $1 million from Qatar for his birthday and to go give a few speeches there. And Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, approved a weapons deal for Qatar. And this all happened in like the same time frame. So it's like, hey, here's $1 million. Now you'll approve my weapons deal, right? So that's what we call pay-to-play corruption. And there's other examples of this, too, all around the world. The Clinton Foundation had so many rich donors around the world who wanted favors for giving money to the foundation, and that's one of the things Trump hit Hillary Clinton on and said, who are you kidding with this? This is so clearly pay-to-play corruption. But now I'm supposed to believe it's different when Trump's in there and he's got businesses all over the world? No, there's no way. There's no way. Just recently, again, to bring up Saudi Arabia, because they appear to be the biggest violator, they gave Trump like $270,000 to stay at his hotel. Why would you give somebody that much money? Because it's pay-to-play corruption. They're not really paying for it. They try to break it down like, oh, yes, X amount was for lodging, and this amount was for food, and this nonsense. It doesn't cost that much money to stay there, but they wanted to give him something extra so that they get favors in return. That's how this game is played in Washington. So now it's not only an independent group that's suing Trump. And one of the arguments his lawyers made was, no, they can't sue because they don't have standing to sue. Well, how about the Attorneys General of Maryland and D.C.? They certainly have standing to sue. Now, by the way, I would just want to read you the exact provision here. This is the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. It says, no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept of any president, emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. So in other words, you can't get compensation from any foreign government when you're president. That's what that means. That's how you say that in layman's terms. Now, another one of the arguments that Trump's attorneys made was, well, let's just let Congress decide. No, but hold on. You needed a waiver from Congress beforehand. So in other words, if Congress had approved beforehand that Trump, in a rare instance, accepts compensation from another country, that's fine under the Constitution. But they didn't get a waiver. He had his business empire before he even became president. So what, you can't, like, after the fact, approve all the individual instances of getting compensation from foreign governments and say it's okay. No, there needed to be a waiver beforehand to do it. But like I said, he's got businesses in at least 12 different countries around the world. And yes, governments are paying him for services. So that's not an option now. You can't say, well, now you go back and let Congress decide. No, now it's a matter for the courts because they're suing you to determine whether or not you violated the Constitution already. And on a plain face reading of this, that's absolutely what you did. In fact, I see no other possible interpretation. They're saying you can't accept money from foreign governments. You accept money from foreign governments all the time. And then also let me add on top of all this, isn't it funny how the Constitution makes clear, like, hey, you definitely can't accept money from a foreign government if you're president, because then there's a giant conflict of interest in how do we know you're doing what's best for the American people. But isn't it funny how it's just, like, viewed as so normal in Washington that, well, yeah, it's crazy accepting money from foreign governments. But you accept money from billionaires here in the U.S., that's perfectly fine. What? You can take money from billionaires, no conflict of interest, no corruption. You can accept money from corporations, no conflict of interest, no corruption. You know, this is what the Supreme Court said, money equals speech. So, you know, corporations, billionaires, no problem there whatsoever. So everybody will look the other way and pretend like there's nothing bad happening. But when it's money from a foreign government to our president, wow, come on, this is obviously pay-to-play. Well, why isn't it pay-to-play corruption when it's a government, or excuse me, when it's a corporation, when it's a billionaire? That is pay-to-play. You just refuse to acknowledge it as such. So perhaps the Supreme Court has misinterpreted the Constitution, and they like to pretend that money equals speech when it doesn't. See, that's what they've done. They've decided, yes, the First Amendment is clear. Money is speech. If money is speech, then why isn't prostitution already legal? Why isn't it legal to smoke crystal meth? Hey, you're the ones that said money equals speech. I didn't say it. So by your own logic, if somebody's paying for a blowjob, they're just expressing with speech how much they love blowjobs. Somebody's buying crystal meth. They're not really buying crystal meth. They're just expressing with speech how much they like crystal meth. It's legal to say, I like crystal meth, right? You said money is speech. I didn't say it. So there you go, money is speech. But that's clearly a ridiculous argument, because if money equals speech, whoever has the most money has the loudest voice in the country. And that clearly violates equal protection under the law. Sheldon Adelson, with his multiple billions of dollars, is going to have a louder megaphone and a louder voice than a grandmother in Cleveland who can barely afford her medication. So it's at face value, you can see that that's not what they meant. That's not what the founders meant when they said you have freedom of speech and free expression. They didn't mean you could buy politicians and get favors in response. And I think the Emoluments Clause is actually a hint at that, where, you know, if they meant money equals speech, then why wouldn't money be speech in this instance? Why wouldn't it be okay for a president to take money from a foreign government? If money equals speech, then that's just speech. That's just a foreign government saying, hey, I like you. Here's how much I'm liking you. I'm expressing that by giving you money. But that's not okay under the Constitution. Why? Because money is not speech. So this has legs, man. And if the Democrats really were serious, they would harp away on this as opposed to the Russia thing, because there's a lot of there in this instance. Okay. Now, we're going to go to President Trump's meeting at the White House. And how sad it is. Oh, my goodness. I think you guys are going to get a kick out of this story, because I certainly did. President Trump had a meeting at the White House, and my voice needs to stop cracking. You know what it is, man? We might talk about this on Kyle and Corin tomorrow. I think it's that I started working out again. Ever since that happened, my voice has been like this, like every 5 minutes. Oh. All right, here we go. President Trump had a meeting at the White House, and the media was invited to watch the beginning of it. This is something that presidents do fairly often. They'll get together with their cabinet, and then the media comes in for a little bit. They'll answer some questions, and then the media will go away. But this was a little bit different. This meeting, because Trump proceeded to call on each member of his cabinet to say a few brief words. And inevitably, in those few brief words, they would heap praise on him. So it certainly appears like Donald Trump told his cabinet before they let the media in, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to call on each one of you. You're going to tell me how tremendous I am and what an amazing job we're doing for America. We're making America great again. Believe me. Let me just tell you. And then the fake news media will see how everything's going so well. All right, you guys ready? Everybody ready? So if you don't believe me, I have a little sample of it here for you. Take a look.
But I'm going to start with our vice president. Where is our vice president? Our vice president. Maybe start with Mike, and we'll just go around and just you name your position, and then we'll ask these folks to go back and have a good day, and we're going to discuss our various reports. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. President, and this is the greatest privilege of my life, is to serve as Vice President, to the President, who's keeping his word to the American people, and assembling a team that's bringing real change.
Rapidly. You're right, Jeff. Thank you very much. Alex?
Mr. President, I am privileged to be here, deeply honored, and I want to thank you for being your commitment to the American workers.
Mr. President, honored to be on the team. My hat's off to you for taking that stand and for sending a clear message around the world that America is going to continue to lead in the area of energy.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
of Health Human Services at this pivotal time under your leadership. I can't thank you enough for the privileges you've given me and the leadership that you've shown.
I want to thank you for getting this country moving again and also working again.
Who does that, man? Who does that? He really is a man baby. A serious person doesn't do that.
Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to go around the room and you guys are going to tell me how tremendous a job I'm doing and how we're making America great again. Is everybody okay with that? Okay.
I'm speechless. Because he's playing president. That's what he's doing. He's pretending to be president. I mean, he is president, but he's pretending to be president. And, you know, if you really were doing a great job, you wouldn't need to tell people to pump you up and tell you how great you're doing. And also, a president who's really a serious person would be fucking up to their eyeballs in the minutiae and the details of various policies at the moment. And they'd be making really tough decisions. They wouldn't have time for these dumbass fucking photo ops and shit. I mean, this is North Korea-style propaganda.
You're all going to tell me I'm great, right? Go ahead, please. Everybody tell me I'm great.
This is just Banana Republic garbage is what it is. And what's crazy to me is I don't know how people who are still defending Trump, which isn't many people, I mean, his approval rating, depending on what poll you look at, it's about 35%. Like, you don't see through that? What, you think that was totally organic and natural? I'm just going to call on everybody and have them make brief statements, and inevitably in virtually all their statements they're going to tell me how great I am and how tremendous I'm doing and how it's an honor to serve me and a privilege. And man, Trump is one of those guys where, like, all of the almost stereotypes about him, if you could call them stereotypes about a specific person, but, like, all the things his biggest detractors say, they just get proven true over time. Like, he's an insecure, petty, narcissistic little man who he's not serious enough to really – they talk about it. The people in his inner circle who are leaking stuff say, like, yeah, he's got the attention span of a fucking gnat. You can't give him, like, more than a page briefing with bullet points. So, you know, and you got to – there were articles the other day. They distracted him repeatedly while the Comey testimony was on so he wouldn't tweet about it. This is the President of the United States. This is the most powerful man on earth. I'm trying to picture if I'm in a position of authority, if I'm a senator, if I'm president, under what scenario would I ever, I wouldn't have the nerve to say to my cabinet, all right, you guys are all going to praise me when the media comes in. But you know what? Here's the worst part. Like I just said, like, how do his people fall for it? How do the people who are still big-time defenders of Trump fall for it? Not only do they fall for it, they will literally use this as evidence of how great he is. They will. They'll be like, oh, yeah, we know he's doing a great job. Remember that meeting ad with his cabinet where everybody was talking about how tremendous he is and how great he is? He's unbelievable. Or else why would they say it? They're saying it. This is actually one of the ways Trump built his empire. He's a shitty businessman. So many of his businesses went bankrupt. There was Trump the board game and Trump vodka and Trump mortgage company. All of them belly up, did horrible. Trump steaks that were only sold at the Sharper Image. That doesn't even make fucking sense. So how did he still keep his name relevant? Because he's built a career off of his bragging and his bombast and his arrogance. When you go around and say, I'm the best there ever was, I'm tremendous, and you need to understand that we are the most successful business, one of the best businesses, we have the most tremendous assets, it's unbelievable how many assets we have. When you say that in a room full of 100 people, yeah, at least 25 of them or 30 of them are going to go, this guy's a real deal, bro. And that's what Trump is. So, in fact, one of the ways he was making money towards, you know, the end before he became president, other than The Apprentice, obviously, was he would sell the rights to put his name on a building. So people would pay him to put the Trump name on their building, because there's no there there with Trump, but the name represents, he's equated Trump with success, because all he does is go out and say, success, that's what we are, we're successful. Look, all these people tell me how tremendous I am. So you and I might look at it and go, that's the saddest, fakest thing I've ever seen in my life. But there are some people who go, oh, look how great he is. See, that's why everybody's telling him how great he is, because he's great. There's no other possible explanation. It can't be that this is all bullshit and stemmed from his insecurity, and he tells them to say this stuff. That's exactly what it is, and everybody should catch on to that. Okay. Next. I have some bad news for Trump here. A new public policy poll was released. Listen to this. 51% of Americans say Comey is more trustworthy than Trump. Just 39% say Trump is more trustworthy than Comey. So, of course, what this is in reference to is Comey testifying and saying, yeah, look, I think Donald Trump was trying to pressure me to drop the Russia investigation. That's what I think. He said, I hope you can bring yourself to drop, you investigating Flynn. And Comey said it appeared like he was trying to grant him the ability to stay on in his position as FBI director in return for Comey's loyalty and dropping the investigation into Flynn and pledging loyalty to him. And the stories are just crazy. It's Trump, you know, first of all, Trump lying after the fact, saying, Comey invited me to dinner. Yeah, that's what happened. Comey's like, that's crazy. I've never done that. I would never do that. The FBI is supposed to be independent. I don't even want to know the guy. I want to be independent. And I thought other people were going to be at the dinner. It was just me and Trump, and Trump was feeling him out, basically, trying to figure out, like, where does he stand? Is this guy loyal? Is he going to investigate? What's going to happen here? And so with Comey's testimony basically admitting, like, yeah, Trump was doing obstruction of justice, public policy polling decided, let's look into this and see who people believe. And 51% of people say Comey's more trustworthy than Trump. Only 39% say Trump is more trustworthy than Comey. So that's an issue. That's a problem for Trump. Furthermore, just 13% say the FBI chief should do what the president tells them to do. 77% say, no, of course not, the FBI should be independent. So, good, that's Americans' understanding that you should have independence among the federal agencies. Not everything should be a political decision. And then here's the most important one. 47% of voters support Trump being impeached, while only 43% oppose it. More Americans support impeachment than oppose it at this super early stage in Trump's presidency. Wow. That's wild. That's fucking wild. Now, look, I've spoken about this before. Has Trump violated the Constitution? Has he done something that is impeachment-worthy? Of course. I mean, whether it's violating the Emoluments Clause, the anti-corruption clause of the Constitution about accepting money from foreign governments. It's a fact he accepted money from foreign governments, so case closed. Game, set, match. Over. Yes, he violated it. In terms of doing obstruction of justice, yeah, he did obstruction of justice. Is that worthy of impeachment? Sure. So you can impeach him. The question is whether or not it's a good move politically. And on that one, I don't know, because the Democrats would waste a lot of political capital on it, and then you get polite Trump, who's Mike Pence, who's going to do all the same shit as Trump, if not even worse shit, because I think he would approve TPP as well. And he does it with a smile on his face, and he doesn't generate the same kind of outrage and scorn from the media as Trump does. So you waste political capital and you just get the polite version of Donald Trump. The Democrats probably should be focusing on stuff like single payer and a living wage and free college and ending the wars and getting money out of politics, but they can't do that because they're also corporate in nature as well. So whether or not you should actually do it is a different question as to whether or not he's done something that's impeachment worthy. Has he done stuff? Oh, of course. Absolutely. I think you can impeach him in 0.2 seconds. Should you do it? That's a different question. But as of right now, 47% of voters support it being done, only 43% oppose it. That is incredible, and Trump is in a lot of trouble. Okay, let's take a break. And then when we come back, Chelsea Manning's first interview, and how many places can you live on the minimum wage? You're not going to want to miss that story. Stay right there. We'll be right back, guys. My voice isn't cracking as much as I hear it. Yeah, it's puberty round two, so we already got through the bulk of the voice crackage, but now they're putting the final touches on it. You know, it's weird. I noticed, like, if you listen to announcers who you know, were, like, started announcing, let's say, when they're 45 years old. I'm talking about sports announcers. But then you hear them when they're, like, 60 years old. Their voice sounds significantly deeper when they're 60 versus when they're 45. Which leads me to believe, like, I guess your voice always is changing. You know what I mean? Like, certain things stop changing once you're kind of through puberty, but I guess your voice is not one of them. Yeah, so that was just a random little thing I picked up on. All right, now let's discuss Chelsea Manning. This is some feel-good stuff, but then also, I don't know about you guys, but I got a little upset at the kinds of questions that she was being posed. Okay, let's do it. Chelsea Manning did her first interview since getting out of prison. It was with Good Morning America. Let's watch, and then we'll discuss.
Become a beacon for anti-secrecy rights and transgender rights, a hero to many. But critics say she betrayed her country, plain and simple. She would argue, in the fog of war, it's much more complicated than that. So many people call you a traitor. Many call you a hero.
Right.
Who is Chelsea Manning?
So, I'm just me. It's as simple as that.
Yet the story she's sharing this morning for the first time is far more complex. The world first heard about her as Bradley Manning in 2010, when the Army intelligence analyst was charged with leaking the largest trove of government secrets in U.S. history.
Do you feel as though you owe the American public an apology?
I've accepted responsibility. No one told me to do this. Nobody directed me to do this. This is me. It's on me.
It was images like this that Manning says compelled her to go to WikiLeaks, American soldiers carrying out an aerial attack on what ended up being unarmed civilians, including children. Among the dead, two Reuters journalists.
Oh yeah, look at that, right through the windshield.
We're getting all this information, and it's just death, destruction, mayhem, and eventually you just stop. I stopped seeing just statistics and information, and I started seeing people. Counterinsurgency warfare is not a simple thing. It's not as simple as, like, good guys versus bad guys. It is a mess.
She leaked over 700,000 documents in total, saying she wanted to spark public debate.
So you didn't think any of it was going to threaten national security?
No.
There are those who say you may have been motivated to get the information into the public sphere, but you might have also given it to our enemies.
Right, but I have a responsibility to the public. It's not just about, we all have a responsibility.
Manning was acquitted of the most serious charge of aiding the enemy, but pled guilty to others, and was sentenced to the longest prison term for any American leaker, 35 years. Within days, she made another life-changing decision.
What made you decide to come out as trans after being sentenced?
I had to be who I am.
But the military denied her request for hormones, fighting for her right to transition so daunting, she says, she tried to commit suicide twice, which led to time in solitary confinement.
And why was it so important to you to fight for hormone treatments while you were behind bars?
It's literally what keeps me alive. It keeps me from feeling like I'm in the wrong body. I used to get these horrible feelings, like I just want to rip my body apart.
The Army ultimately granted her request, and then 5 months ago, after 7 years in prison, a gift from a parting president, clemency.
I feel very comfortable that justice has been served.
You haven't spoken to President Obama. What would you say to him if you could?
Thank you. I needed a chance. That's all I wanted.
You wanted a chance.
That's all I asked for, was a chance. That's it. And this is my chance.
Even though President Obama commuted Manning's sentence, it was not a pardon. And yet the 7 years she served was already longer than any other leaker in U.S. history. But her fight is not over. She is appealing her case with lawyers from the ACLU and support from Amnesty International, who object to her months in solitary confinement, saying she has more than paid.
That's the point that President Obama made as well. You did a lot of interviews for this story. The intelligence community is still pretty upset.
Absolutely. And the portrait that emerges is a very complex character. She is
a millennial who likes fashion. She has hundreds of thousands of fans on social media, but she has those detractors in the intelligence community who say the bottom line is even if she was trying to expose wrongdoing, she should have gone up the chain of command because there's no way of knowing the long-term impact of those kinds of leaks.
We know. By the way, she tried that. She tried that almost in, always inevitably with these leakers, these whistleblowers. They try to go up the chain of command, and then they get slapped down, and then they try to go to traditional media outlets, and they get ignored, and then they end up having to go to WikiLeaks. In the case of Snowden, he went to The Guardian and Glenn Greenwald. So that's a dodge. That's always a dodge, really. Well, you know, sure, no, it's okay, but you should have went up the chain of command. That's what you should have done, and that's why you violated the law. Wait, but they tried. So they just have to lie about it, the intelligence community, I mean. And look, that wasn't the worst segment in the world. In parts, they portrayed things pretty objectively. But you know what annoys me is that the framing of it at the beginning and in little parts throughout, including at the end there, it's framed as like a, well, you, who knows, traitor, hero, you decide. Here's the story. But no, this is false equivalence 101. This is fake neutrality. This is present both sides. But what about when one side is totally wrong? What about that? What if an American hero was put in jail and tortured? What about that? You know, I guess what I'm annoyed with is that the establishment press doesn't seem to. They seem to lag behind history. So, for example, if there's ever any discussion about Daniel Ellsberg today, he's a hero. He's a hero. That's it. End of conversation. Hero. Now, what did Daniel Ellsberg do? He leaked the Pentagon Papers. The Pentagon Papers, that showed us that the U.S. military was using Agent Orange and napalm and killing innocent villagers in Vietnam and committing war crimes and atrocities left and right. Now, at the time, he was derided as a traitor. Sound familiar? Snowden, Manning, same thing. Same script, different people. So you have Chelsea Manning. Hey, I'm releasing all this stuff here. Look at that. We just learned, and they touched on it there. We just learned that the U.S. military was massacring civilians and laughing about it, by the way, and killing little kids and Reuters journalists go, whoopsies, well, guilty enough, let's move along here. So you have somebody release that, you have Snowden release the fact that the NSA is spying on everybody and collecting everybody's metadata, and that's wildly in violation of the Fourth Amendment. And what do they do? They say, traitor! Traitor! Are you working with the enemy? Maybe you're working with the enemy. Why are you trying to damage your country? I think you're trying to damage your country. No, these are patriots who are trying to make the government act legally. They're saying, hey, what you're doing is unconstitutional and illegal and wrong, and I'm going to blow the whistle on it. But it's always flipped back on them. No, you're the one that broke the law by exposing the crimes of the government. And in the establishment press, they lag behind the times inevitably. So you can't just come out and say, American hero. American hero, let's discuss the facts of what she did, because when you look at the facts in an objective, sober way, you go, oh, that is a hero. But they can't do that. So what do they do? 50-50, set up the framing. Some say you're a traitor. Some say you're a hero. Yeah, all the people who say she's a fucking traitor are either absolute ignorant buffoons or they're people within the intelligence community who don't like that we're exposing what not only they're guilty of, but what the U.S. military is guilty of and what the government is guilty of doing with our money in our name. Atrocities around the world and unconstitutional privacy rights violations in the case of what Edward Snowden exposed. So I would like to see, again, it wasn't the worst segment in the world because some of it portrayed Chelsea in a positive fashion, and the facts show that Chelsea is a very positive person and is a hero, but the framing of it is what got me, and the insistence on dropping little bits here and there about what the intelligence community says. Because that's just like interjecting with, let me tell you what the bad guys say. like, why would you do that? And by the way, here's what the people, you know the people we exposed that they're covering up crimes? They say that it's not good that you expose them covering up crimes. Yeah, well, no shit. But why are you presenting that as if it's like they're totally legitimate? They're not legitimate. They've been exposed as the loathsome scumbags they are. So it's not 50-50. It's not maybe a traitor, maybe a hero. It's a fucking hero. And we all should acknowledge that. So, Chelsea, I'm glad that you're out, and I'm glad you have a new beginning for life here. You deserve it more than anybody. Okay. All right, next. CityLab, which is a website linked to The Atlantic, crunched some numbers about housing. And take a look at this. Rent is affordable to low-wage workers in exactly 12 U.S. counties. Only 12 counties rent is affordable to low-wage workers. So here's what it says there. 2017 hours at minimum wage needed to afford a one-bedroom rental home by county or metro area. I don't know if you guys can see that small font, so I'll read it to you. In only 12 counties can a full-time worker earning the prevailing federal or state minimum wage afford a one-bedroom rental home at the fair market rent without paying more than 30% of their income. Only 0.1% of renter households reside in these areas. 76.4% of renter households reside in a county or metro area where a minimum wage worker must work more than 60 hours per week. So if you make minimum wage, there's only 12 counties. See the yellow on the map there? That's it. Only in those places, if you work minimum wage, can you afford a one-bedroom home. That's mental. Yeah. This is what the Democrats need to focus on. This is what they need to build campaigns around. This is what they have to try to fix. But they're not going all in on that. Why? Because they have corporate donors as well. The Republicans are totally drenched in corporate money. We all know that. But a lot of the Democrats take corporate money too. And if you're pushing for a living wage 24/7, you're going to piss off your donor base, because your donor base are the corporations who are that's the one group that do not want to see the minimum wage become a living wage. Even a majority of Republicans want to see the minimum wage become a living wage. So 80% of the country wants to see that happen, wants to raise the minimum wage, but you don't have the Democrats going all in and doing a full court press trying to get it, because they're also beholden to corporate donors. Guys, this is abysmal. The year is 2017, and the minimum wage is not a living wage. And by the way, what happens as a result of this? Guess what? Somebody's got to make up the difference. Somebody's got to make up the difference. So these people end up going to government programs to get the assistance they need in order to get by. Who pays for it when you go to a government program? The taxpayers, as opposed to the corporations. So if you raise the minimum wage to a living wage, you're making the corporations pay people a living wage and pay them their fair share. But if you keep the minimum wage low, then people have to go to the government to make up the difference so they can survive, which means the burden is shifted onto the taxpayers. So if you were to raise the minimum wage, the taxpayers also save money, because you don't need those government programs nearly as much as you did before. So it's a trick that corporations do. They shift the burden onto middle-class taxpayers when they should be paying people a living wage. And we've discussed it before, but if the minimum wage simply kept up with inflation from 1968, it would be over $10 an hour today, which means that somebody on minimum wage today is making less than they made in 1968. That's what that means. If it kept up with productivity, it'd be over $20 an hour. If it kept up with earnings of the top 1%, it'd be over $21 an hour. So people are artificially underpaid because the system is rigged against middle-class people and against poor people. And now in the United States, if you work minimum wage, you can only afford a one-bedroom home in 12 counties. Think about how abysmal that is. This is the definition of a rigged system. Meanwhile, one family, the Walton family, the Walmart heirs, they didn't do the work and set it up, and they're the successful ones. They're the ones who are getting it passed down to them. But they have more than 40% of the American people. One family, the Walton family, has more wealth than 40% of the American people combined. People can't even afford to get a place to stay if they're on minimum wage. This is a rigged system. Money has corrupted our politics. We have to get money out of the system. We have to get a living wage. We have to get free college. We have to get Medicare for all. These are all basic things that would make the U.S. catch up to other modern nations. We should go 100% down that path right now. JusticeDemocrats.com, by the way. Our candidates are for all the right things. Go read our platform. That's what our candidates are going to fight for. And as I've explained to you guys before, our candidates take no corporate money and no PAC money, so they're at a permanent financial disadvantage unless you guys help us and make up the difference. So go to JusticeDemocrats.com/donate to try to take out corporate Joe Manchin, to try to take out corrupt Joe Crowley. These are the most corporate of the corporate Democrats. We're running against them. So come be part of the revolution. Come help us out and take that next step. JusticeDemocrats.com/donate. We have to go after it together, and we have to fix this situation because this is unacceptable, and nobody's talking about it either. But Justice Democrats are going to be there to do exactly that. Okay. Now let's go to Charles Krauthammer. Charles Krauthammer is considered an intellectual on the right, even though he's a clown. And this week, he gave us this awesome clip, which you're about to watch, where he manages to get virtually everything wrong about the Democrats.
You know, for all the talk of splits within the Republican Party and that they can't herd the cats on health care or tax reform, there is just a major split in the Democratic Party.
And they have no idea how to resolve it. The left has the energy. They also have the leadership. They have him. They obviously have Senator from Massachusetts, Warren, and, you know, they're the ones who are leading the conversation. But, you know, if they want to go that way, that's Kool-Aid. This country is, historically, for 250 years, has not taken kindly to socialism. That is essentially what he is offering. They think it's their moment. They're going to go, for example, I think, for single payer and health care, which is a fairly radical idea. And if they pursue the Sanders route, particularly if they have another party, a People's Party, that will destroy the Democrats, and it will give a very unsteady and split Republicans a new lease on life, which is what they really need. This is very self-destructive, which means it's very capital D Democratic.
I almost think he's trolling us, because nobody could be that stupid. I mean, does Charles believe that? He might not believe that. He might. You know what it might be? It might be him saying, oh, Democrats, you need to go the Hillary route to win. That's the only way you can win, is try to be more like Hillary Clinton again and be very corporate and stuff. Because if he says that and the Democrats go in that direction, then the Republicans keep winning. So it could be like a trolling trick, where he's like, oh, wow, if you go in the direction of Hillary, you are going to kick our Republican asses. So, I don't know, maybe he's doing that, but if he's not doing that, then it's even sadder, because then he's just the worst political analyst I've ever seen in my life. Because we've had the model that he likes of Democrat. We've had the center-right corporate establishment Democrats, and the Democrats have lost over 1,000 seats. So they're wiped out from coast to coast, having done the model that Krauthammer's like, yeah, that's the best model. So the empirical evidence is there. Bernie Sanders is the most liked politician in America right now, 61% favorability rating. Donald Trump's favorability is 35%. Hillary Clinton's is 35%. Bernie nearly doubles them. Bernie goes to deep red states and gets standing ovations from Trump voters who are on the side of Medicare for all and free college and a living wage. I mean, this is the stuff Bernie fights for, a new deal. He gets thanked by Trump voters for fighting for the people. So there's no question. People need to stop pretending like this is a 50-50 debate or that the Hillary side is correct. You're wrong. You lost to a reality star buffoon who bragged about grabbing women by the pussy. Quote, I don't even wait. So if you lose to that guy, that's it. Strike one, you're out. You're done. You step aside. Go find some. Go pick up a hobby or something. Go play some Pogs. Use a Tamagotchi. Go sit out. Go sit in the corner. What are you doing? You're no longer welcomed at the table with the big boys where we're having real conversations about real issues. So I just want to tackle two more things he said there real fast because I found it hilarious. For so many years, this country has not been kind to socialism. Excuse you? What's the most popular government programs in the United States? Social Security and Medicare. Those are socialist programs. Those are government programs. By the way, the military is also socialist. It's the government. The government obviously runs it. It's not a private mercenary army. It's the government. Firefighters, cops, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, unemployment insurance. Try taking away people's unemployment insurance and see how much they love socialism. The list goes on and on. Child labor laws. This country isn't kind of socialism. What the fuck are you talking about? FDR. They needed to invent term limits to kick out FDR because his social democratic ass was so popular that the Republicans like, never again. We got to kick these people who are social Democrats. We're going to have to kick them out of office. We need term limits because they'll keep winning because their ideas are so fucking popular. So what are you talking about? What are you talking about? The most popular things in the country are socialist programs. So spare me. And then he goes, single payer is a radical idea. If it's radical, then again, why is Medicare is a single payer system for elderly people that we have in this country? And it's wildly popular, and it gets better ratings than any other program. So that's radical, then why do a majority of people like it? If a majority of people like it, that means it's right in the center of the country. Represents most people. That's the center of the country. Every other modern nation has one version or another of single payer. So, no, what's radical is what you want, Charles. What you want, a crazy for-profit private health insurance system with rapacious middlemen who rob you and deny you care as much as possible. That's radical. You're radical. People who just want healthcare to be a right like it is in every other modern nation, and they want our tax dollars to go towards paying for people's healthcare as opposed to blowing up random people overseas, that's rational and reasonable and moderate and centrist. We're the only modern country that doesn't have a version of single payer. So, but this is the Fox News bubble and the right-wing fantasy land of they're radical, Medicare for all so radical. Except all the facts say the opposite, but yes, keep talking out of your ass. Again, I want to reiterate, this is the guy who people on the right say is an intellectual. If that's an intellectual, imagine what their dumbasses look like. Okay. Let's take a final break real quick, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the body-slamming congressman and what's happening in Yemen and Syria. You don't want to miss it. Stay right there.
Bubba talk, got you open wide. I jiggle outside the booth, but ain't no joke inside. else can I say it? I don't speak no other languages. I'm feeling real now. So this is Jimmy talking. You hear that beat, don't you? That's just Jimmy talking. Go ahead, throw them bubbles. Fuck it, break a bottle. Let's be honest, none of us will ever date a model. So let's just cut it loose. Ignore the repercussions. If you're scared, then just forget what we discussing. Just that new sound. Take a picture of me, cause I'm a fucking legend. And this is getting ugly. What makes it special? This whole moment came from nothing. Now you see it triple. I bet you slurp tonight. Laying pots and waters, hating brawls, clutching versus tight. If you ain't trying to live, you're with the wrong crowd. And if you feeling brave, then bet it's for that song proud. And if you finally breathing, then sing this song loud. I'm glad I got you wet. I know you had a long drought. Don't worry about the law. They can't arrest us all. I had to break it. Couldn't have done nothing left for y'all. Forget the inhibitions. I want to see you wildin'.
System, because there is no doubt in my mind that that's the case. So buckle up, because this one's depressing. You remember Greg Gianforte? He's the Republican congressman who body slammed a reporter on the eve of the election and then won it in a landslide. Well, this is from NPR. They say, Montana Representative-elect Greg Gianforte pleaded guilty Monday to a charge of misdemeanor assault after body slamming a reporter from The Guardian on the eve of Gianforte's election to the U.S. House. He received a six-month deferred sentence and will serve no jail time. Guardian reporter Ben Jacobs was asking Gianforte a question on May 24th when the Republican candidate threw him to the ground. A Gallatin County judge sentenced Gianforte to 40 hours of community service, 20 hours of anger management classes, and a $300 fine. Totally unprovoked, he assaulted a journalist. It wasn't like a little push. It wasn't, you know, they bumped into each other and one guy, like, slapped the other or something. No, it was unprovoked. I'm going to body slam you, get on top of you, punch you, and break your glasses. No jail time. None. Maximum jail time for this is 6 months. Originally, the judge said, we're going to do 4 days in jail. Then a few minutes later, he came out and said, actually, no, what we're going to do is 40 hours of community service, 20 hours of anger management classes, and a $300 fine. So he commits assault a day before the election, wins, and he's serving no jail time. Wow. Okay, now, while at the same time this is happening, take a look at this. Reporter covering inauguration protests now faces 75 years in prison. So there's a journalist who's facing felony riot charges, riot, incitement to riot, conspiracy to riot, and 5 counts of destruction of property. Didn't do any of that. Did none of it. But was a journalist who was in the middle of people who were doing that, he was covering it, arrested, facing 75 years in prison. So didn't do violence, didn't do anything, was a journalist doing their job, facing 75 years in prison, body slamming a journalist, doing assault, totally unprovoked, wasn't defensive by any stretch of the imagination, no jail time. By the way, John Forte, on top of now being a soon-to-be congressman, he's also a billionaire. White Republican billionaire. Checks all the boxes. All the boxes. You can do whatever you want. A white Republican billionaire. He just committed assault and got no jail time. That is fucking incredible. That is fucking incredible. Okay. Don't tell me there's not a two-tier justice system. There's at least 2 tiers. There's probably more than 2 tiers. 3-tier, 4-tier justice system. But he's in that upper echelon. White Republican billionaire politician. Oh, what? What? White Republican billionaire politician. That's the same box as Trump. You get away with whatever you want to get away with, man. Assault. Like, I'm one of those people where certain crimes, I go, you're kind of a bad person if you do that one. Assault, that's in that category. Like, if you murder somebody, if you rape somebody, like, you're a bad person. You're a bad person. Even if you kind of, like, you know, redeem yourself and change, like, you were a really bad person. This is another, like, assault, I'm comfortable with lumping you into the bad person box. And the guy did assault, totally gets away with it. And, in fact, is rewarded, wins the election. Journalists getting facing up to 75 years. And how many people are in locked up for years because of a non-violent drug offense? A non-violent drug offense, so just caught with some coke or some weed or whatever, and they're facing years and years in prison and are in prison for that long. Assaults a reporter in a room full of other reporters, everybody says, totally unprovoked, no jail time. White Republican billionaire politician. The untouchables. The untouchables in the opposite sense of, like, untouchables as in, seriously, the law can't touch them. They're above the law. Okay, now let's discuss Yemen. Look at what's happening in Yemen as a direct result of Saudi Arabia and the policies that we support. More than 859 people die from cholera as U.S.-backed war continues. So this is from Democracy Now. They say, in Yemen, a civilian is dying nearly every hour from a massive cholera outbreak as the ongoing U.S.-backed Saudi-led bombing campaign and naval blockade has devastated the country's health, sanitation, and water systems. The World Health Organization says cholera has now killed at least 859 people. More than 100,000 people are infected. This is the Health Ministry spokesperson Abdel Hakim Al-Kalani. Quote, the ministry had to announce the state of emergency. The ministry announced that it is powerless in facing this epidemic on its own and that we need international support and international organizations to aid in combating this epidemic. Okay. So for those of you who don't know the details of what's going on in Yemen, it's mostly because Western media is ignoring it. But in Yemen, over 10,000 people have died because of a Saudi bombing campaign. So Saudi Arabia wants their Sunni leader back in power in Yemen. Now it's a Shia government. And so they're just bombing everything in sight. There's reports of them bombing mosques, hospitals, open-air markets, schools. A school for the blind they bombed. They're using illegal munitions, including cluster bombs, which have kill civilians all the time, and they linger after the fact and blow up later on. So you're not allowed to use them, but they're using them, and we're selling them to them. Many women and children have died. By some counts, up to 50% of the people dead are civilians. So, man, this is, it's horrible. Now, on top of that, you think that's bad. That is bad enough. And by the way, we're also not just arming them and everything. We're also helping them with coordinates in their bombing campaign. So we're totally an accomplice to all this stuff. But also, Saudi Arabia is doing a blockade of Yemen. So they're keeping out aid, medicine, food. And as a result of that, at least 14 million people are starving. And now there's a cholera outbreak, and people are dying of cholera. Noam Chomsky has a famous quote. He says, "You want to stop terrorism? There's an easy way to stop terrorism. Stop participating in it." So you want to stop terrorism? Stop arming Saudi Arabia. Stop letting them get away with war crimes. Stop aiding them and abetting them in doing that. Just stop. That's it. That's all you have to do. But no, business as usual. The status quo overrides everything. Oil overrides everything. And this is the point where we're at. And then they're going to pretend like, well, this is Syria. We care about the dying civilians in Syria so much. Well, how about you care about the dying civilians in Yemen who you are aiding and killing? In Syria, you know, if you just stay out of there, you're not aiding and killing anybody. It's a civil war going on. Why would you fucking get involved in a civil war? You're not third party unnecessarily. So instead of feigning concern for civilians in Syria, how about you actually have concern for the civilians in Yemen who you're taking part in killing and starving? It's pathetic, man. It's pathetic. And we all sit around, and then the U.S. pretends all the time, oh, we have freedom and democracy, and we're the world police, and we care about human rights and altruism, which is why we aid Saudi Arabia in massacring kids and women and starving people to death and bombing hospitals. All right, now we move on to Syria. About a month ago, we covered a story about how the U.S. is using chemical weapons in Syria, and very few outlets covered it, very few people picked it up, but apparently now it's getting another round of coverage because the United States has not stopped using chemical weapons. So now the New York Times is even reporting on it. They say this: images and reports from witnesses in the northern Syrian city of Raqqa suggest that the United States-led coalition battling the Islamic State there has used munitions loaded with white phosphorus, the use of which in populated areas is prohibited under international law. Photographs and video clips posted online showed blinding spots of light spreading outward on Thursday night over what residents said was eastern Raqqa. By day, the images showed how white puffs trailing tentacles of white smoke Both are typical visual signatures of white phosphorus, which can be loaded into artillery shells. Residents reached by text message reported similar bombardment on Friday. So, this is illegal under international law. Let me give you a few other facts as what's been happening recently. Tens of thousands of civilians are still in Raqqa. Now, it is the capital of ISIS, so let's be clear about that. It is the capital of ISIS, but there are a lot of civilians. Tens of thousands of civilians are still in there, basically as hostages under ISIS, and 40,000 kids are still there. So this is like carpet bombing with chemical weapons. That's what it is. You're using white phosphorus when you're going to get a lot of civilians, but apparently the U.S. military doesn't care. And, oh yeah, by the way, we just bombed an internet cafe, and at the internet cafe was somebody who was working with the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights and was constantly giving them updates on the casualty numbers in Raqqa and what was happening in Raqqa. So indiscriminate bombing, that's what's happening. Not only indiscriminate bombing, but indiscriminate bombing with illegal weapons. You're not allowed to use white phosphorus specifically in civilian populated areas, and that's exactly what they're doing. So remember, we made a big thing. Oh, my God, Assad using chemical weapons. Oh, my God, he's killing civilians with chemical weapons. Now, when we do it, we're like, what do you mean? Oh, we're doing the exact thing that we were saying was illegal and wrong and maybe is makes them ripe for regime change. So let me ask you a question. Can, like, the UK or Australia go, look, sorry, we're going to have to do regime change in the United States. We're going to have to go militarily topple the government in the United States. Why? They were just using white phosphorus in Syria. What are you talking about? They said that's grounds to oust Assad. Using white phosphorus, chemical weapons to kill civilians. That's exactly what the U.S. is doing right now. Should we have regime change done against us? I would imagine you'd say no, which would mean you have a double standard. So when they do it, topple them. When we do it, the textbook definition of hypocrisy. So, look, the bottom line is, Trump said he was going to do this. Trump said it, Ted Cruz said it, virtually every Republican candidate said it. They go, civilian casualties, schmafillion flasualties. I don't give a fuck. We have to loosen the rules of engagement. And they have, by the way. They did it in Somalia specifically. We loosen the rules of engagement, because what do we got to do? We can't fight these politically correct wars. That's another thing they say. You can't fight these politically correct wars, meaning, hey, look, you got to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs, you got to kill civilians, so be it. So now you kill civilians and you kill white phosphorus, illegal under international law, cluster bombs we're letting Saudi Arabia use. We're selling them to Saudi Arabia as they use them in Yemen. So we don't care about human rights. We don't care about human rights. We don't care about being the world police. We don't care about civil liberties, human rights. It's just not a consideration. So how about we get the fuck out of Syria? How about that? How about you let people in the region fight ISIS? How about you let the Syrian government fight ISIS? By the way, we're also attacking the Syrian government like every other day now. So we're just bombing anybody. Fuck it. Bomb away. Who cares? Just war-obsessed country and government, because we got to keep that military-industrial complex churning along. But, yeah, let people in the Middle East fight ISIS. Let the Kurds fight ISIS. Let Shia militias fight ISIS. Let the Syrian government fight ISIS. They're in their region. They ain't in Nebraska. So why not do that, and we'll focus on our own country and take our money and resources and rebuild our infrastructure, change it from a grade of D+ to an A+, get single-payer health care, free college. No, of course not. That would make too much sense. Instead, we have to waste over 50% of our discretionary spending on the military, and we have to spend $100 billion a year on 800 military bases around the world. We just have to waste our money on stupid shit. We have to do it. Okay. Next. So a bunch of fake lefties decided to go after Nomiki Const on Twitter for some comments she made at the People's Summit. So Nomiki said this: no open primaries for Democratic Party equals voter suppression and racism with young independent voters. That's a pretty reasonable comment, but Alex Leo said, white-splaining at its finest or at its best. What does that even mean? So she's white, so she can't have an opinion about what is and isn't voter suppression. Wow, that, like, are they trying to make shitty arguments and be a living, breathing parody? Because you could use that phrase, so any white person says anything, white-splaining, ha-ha. That's it, that's all you got? That's your best point. Then you have no point. Now, furthermore, what exactly is Nomiki saying? Well, she's saying, look, it is by definition less democracy if you have closed primaries. Because you have independents who are left-leaning who want to participate in the process, and they can't participate in the process because of the rules. How many Bernie voters were turned away from the polls in New York because the rules were you obviously have to be a Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary, and oh yeah, by the way, you can't, you'd have to change your party affiliation if you were so inclined to do so, like 6 months before the fucking election, before a lot of people even knew who Bernie was. I know my brother-in-law is a registered Republican, wanted to vote for Bernie Sanders. Couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. Why couldn't he do it? Because the rules are ridiculous. So, yes, when you say, hey, it's a closed primary, it is closed, which means you don't get independence, you know, being a part of the process, which means it is less democracy by definition. That is voter suppression at face value. It's a basic logical deduction. You want fewer people to vote, therefore that is voter suppression. And yes, there are many people of color who are left out in the process. Many women who are left out in the process. But no, just smear her. I can't respond logically, so I'm just going to smear you. So white-splaining. Well, guess who decided to chime in along with this? Oh, Joy Reid, lean forward, MSNBC, so liberal, yay. Let's see what she had to say. This demand that people outside a party get to choose the party's nominees is always amazing to me. All right, let me pause there. Why is it amazing to you? Why is it amazing? Because you know that when it's just partisan Democrats who vote in the primary, Hillary's more likely to win. But when you allow in left-leaning independents, Bernie's more likely to win. You get a lot more millennials involved in the process when you do that, when you have an open primary. No, you have to call yourself by what I want you to call you, or else you don't deserve a vote. Okay, so then you just believe in democracy less, Joy. Just admit it. Just say it. I don't believe in democracy as much as I should. I believe in democracy less than you do, who want open primaries, who want more people involved in the process. Just say it. Just say it. She continues. It's like saying, I'm not going to be your roommate, but I demand the right to help you choose an apartment since I might visit one day. In fact, not only do I not want to be your roommate, I intend to trash whatever apartment you pick when I visit, but let me pick the place. Am I going to chip in or on rent? Nah, that's your problem. Utilities, food? How dare you patronize me with your establishment corporatism? I have no intention of participating in any way in the maintenance of your apartment, but how dare you exclude me from the choice? Okay, let me hold on here for a sec. It's not an apartment, Joy. It's democracy. It's not your apartment. It's not your lifestyle in New York City with all your friends, and oh, we pay rent together and watch Girls on HBO, and oh my God, isn't the democratic process exactly like me and my life and what's happening in my... No, it's not like that at all. Your private apartment is your private apartment. Democracy is democracy. We want open primaries. We want more people to vote because we believe more in democracy than you do. You want fewer people to vote, which means you literally believe in less democracy. It's not like your apartment. It's nothing like your apartment. And perhaps the people who are criticizing the Democrats, who are left-leaning independents, who are criticizing from outside the party, are just so disgusted with the fact that the Democrats don't stand up and fight for a living wage on a regular basis. They don't fight for Medicare for all. They don't fight for free college. They don't fight to end the wars and the 7 different interventions we have going on right now. They don't fight for a New Deal. They don't talk about the fact that our infrastructure gets a grade of D+. They don't talk about the fact that half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. Maybe people are frustrated because the Democrats aren't being actual liberals and progressives, Joy. Maybe they're not standing outside just trying to throw bombs at the Democratic Party out of malice. Maybe they're trying to improve the party, Joy. I better police my tone because I'm white-splaining. So therefore, everything I'm saying in terms of the substance, disregard it and ignore it because I'm white-splaining, so I am by definition incorrect. La, 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 anything you say is wrong because you're white. La, 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 la. Aren't I so progressive? Aren't I so progressive? No, you're not. You're nowhere near progressive. Okay. Then she says, parties are like apartments. You chip in or you're a visitor. Feel free to bring wine when you drop by, but don't tell me how to decorate. And then here's the ultimate ending to this. Bernie and his followers are like that college friend who stays at your place for weeks, pays $0, eats your food, and trashes your aesthetic. Joy Ann Reid just made the Mitt Romney argument. Bernie and his followers are like that college friend who stays at your place for weeks and pays $0, eats your food, and trashes your aesthetic. In other words, lazy parasites, moochers, good for nothing people. Joy, that sounds a lot like the, yeah, you know, progressives, liberals, they're never going to take responsibility for themselves. They're always going to be lazy. They're always going to want handouts. They're always going to be parasites. They're always going to be moochers. 47% of the country. In Joy's mind, it's not 47% of the country, but it's half the Democratic Party, the Bernie supporters. Oh, lazy, lazy moochers. You pay nothing and you want everything. You want a free ride. You want a free lunch. Thank you, Joy. You've now gone full circle and you're making Mitt Romney's arguments because you hate actual progressives and liberals that much. Joy Mitt Romney Reed. Got a ring to it, doesn't it? Joy, I agree with Mitt Romney Reed. Progressives and liberals are lazy parasites and moochers. They want to pay nothing and eat all your food and not pitch in at all. Blah, blah. Or maybe people are really, really mad that the Democratic Party has lost its way and it's now a corporate party. It's a party of Wall Street. It's a party of Big Pharma. They don't talk about Medicare for All on a regular basis. They don't talk about free college. They don't talk about a living wage. They don't talk about ending the wars. They don't talk about a new deal. They don't talk about bringing back Glass-Steagall and re-regulating Wall Street. They're too busy going Russia, 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 and impeach, 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 and not discussing any policy substance that would actually improve the lives of the American people. And the same people that you're shitting on are the people who are trying to fix the Democratic Party and make them a party that cares about the issues and the people and the workers. But you're so caught up in defending your perfect, flawless corporate Democrats and Hillary Clinton's campaign that you can't see straight, and you're now making Mitt Romney arguments in the process of shitting on real progressives and liberals. Congratulations. Lean Forward, MSNBC. This is the left wing on TV. And you wonder why Secular Talk and the Jimmy Dore Show and the Humanist Report and a bunch of different progressive outlets online are thriving. Because this is the garbage they get when they turn on to the – when they tune into the supposedly left-wing TV channel. It ain't left-wing. There's a difference between a democratic bias and a liberal network or a progressive network. They are the democratic hack loyalist network. Defend the corporate Democrats no matter what. That's what they do on MSNBC. Here, I don't give a fuck about party. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, whatever. I don't care. What I care about is the issues, the policy substance. Unlike Joanne Reed, who takes plenty of time to shit on real progressives and liberals and call you lazy moochers, while at the same time she begs you for unity. You're stupid, lazy moochers. You pay nothing and eat all the food. You're useless. Get a job. Anyway, so, yeah, let's – you guys want to unify? You want to unify, Joy? Let's unify. Behind Medicare for All, behind free college, behind a living wage, behind ending the drug war, re-regulating Wall Street, a new deal, ending the wars. Let's unify behind policy substance. Okay. All right, let me squeeze in one more here. I have one of the grossest stories ever to share with you guys. This is from Inverse Science. A man constipated from birth was carrying over 28 pounds of shit. And doctors removed part of his colon to relieve him. So that's one of the most disgusting things I've ever heard in my life. So this poor guy is 22 years old, and he's been constipated his entire life. He has something called Hirschsprung's disease. It's a congenital condition, and it's what happens is your bowels are missing nerve cells, so they don't, like, process food and move it through your digestive system properly. So it just kind of sits there. Now, he's also taken laxatives his whole life, but they don't really work. Because if your body's not naturally moving it along and your nerve cells and your intestines aren't working, then you're in trouble. And doctors say when this guy came in, he literally looked pregnant. And they did the surgery and removed part of his colon, 28 pounds of shit. Oh, my God. Imagine, here's one of the thoughts I had when I saw this. Imagine this guy was alive before modern medicine, before they knew, like, hey, all we got to do is go in and do this. He would have fucking died and, like, drowned in his own shit. It would have backed up so much that it ruptures the walls of his intestines, and he would have had, like, sepsis. I think it's called sepsis. Like, septic shock. His own shit would, like, engulf his whole body and make his blood toxic, and he would die. And he would die in excruciating pain. Oh, my goodness. So, life's a bitch, and nature is a motherfucker. But science has the potential, and medicine has the potential to cure and improve our lives so much. I mean, look at this. But then there's also the flip side of science and advancement in technology, which is like, you know, nuclear weapons were invented, which we could just destroy all of us just with that. So there's upsides and downsides, but imagine how much better this guy feels now. They removed 28 pounds of shit from his body that's been stuck there since he was a baby, that's just been piling up. He probably feels like the happiest person on earth at the moment because he's so relieved. All those years never being able to fully relieve yourself. Oh! Oh, that's so sad. So bad. Okay. But I'm happy for the guy. And thank you to these doctors. They did a great job. Okay. All right, guys. Out of time. Tomorrow, Kyle and Corin. Back here on Thursday. We'll see you then. Love you, baby. All right, everybody. Have a great rest of the day. Peace.